Morning. This is an employer's appeal from an award of black loan benefits that raises three issues for the court's consideration. First, concerning the ALJ's use of offensive collateral estoppel, we believe that the Supreme Court's decision in Park Lane Hosiery and this court's decision in Chicago Truck Drivers requires reversal or remand. Because the administrative law judge did not appreciate the fact that what he had before him was a case of offensive collateral estoppel, he applied a generic collateral estoppel analysis and held that although the Congress had severed a minor's claim from the survivor's claim in 1981 by statute, that is, they made it a separate cause of action, didn't used to be that, that the administrative law judge failed to consider the kinds of phenomenon that characterize this case that Park Lane Hosiery says you have to consider before applying rules, before applying offensive collateral estoppel. And he didn't apply it here in a res judicata sense, that is to bar the claim, but what the way he applied it was to bar any consideration of whether the minor had pneumoconiosis. And let me tell you what he didn't consider, because that's really what's important. First of all, there was 11 years between the closure of the record in the minor's case and the closure of the record in the survivor's claim. So there was a whole bunch of evidence that wasn't developed for litigation. There was a whole bunch of stuff that was developed in connection with the minor's health until the time of his death and until the time of the litigation and the trial of his survivor's claim. Also, nobody raised this. And until after the trial was over. So it was tried, and I think what Park Lane Hosiery says is that if the whole purpose of this is to avoid having to try something that you don't have to try over again, but it was tried. They didn't raise offensive collateral estoppel when the claim was filed, when it was sent to the administrative law judges, or at the trial. No place in any of that until there were briefs. Also, there was a, in connection with the acceptance of the minor's claim after it was, that is, that the minor had pneumoconiosis, remember, no. What the Labor Department says, which is a nice bureaucratic solution which makes no sense and has no logic to it, is that you can not apply collateral estoppel offensively in these cases if there's an autopsy. But if there's other things, and there was a ton of other things here, then you can apply it. I don't understand the Department's point. Maybe they'll explain it. But what I think is of equal importance here is that in the miner's claim, the question of pneumoconiosis was decided solely on the basis of a preference for the treating doctor. This wasn't a very important issue back in the 1980s because they had this true doubt rule. And so whenever anybody wanted to make an award based upon a per se rule in these cases, they didn't use the treating physician rule, they used the true doubt rule. That question was not litigated. Now, since that time, the treating physician rule has come under attack. The treating physician rule has been criticized very much by this court and really is not accepted in this court, and we're going to get to that later because that's the third issue in this case. Also, what we don't have that informs the survivor's claim that didn't inform the minor's claim is 4 years of rulemaking on all of these kinds of questions on whether, this disease is progressive, when it's progressive. Now, there's a whole big rulemaking record on all of that. And so what you have is something which is a fundamentally different case.
What was the outcome? Did the rulemaking
conclude
that disease is non-progressive?
Well, it did not. First of all, this guy doesn't have the kind of disease that is irreversible. The rulemaking concluded, and there's a surprise, I don't think there was a citation of additional authority. What the rulemaking concluded is that pneumoconiosis comes in different types, statutorily, and that some of those types are progressive very rarely. Most of those types, the vast majority of pneumoconiosis, is not progressive. And the D.C. Circuit said they would have struck down the department's new rule if the department stuck to that. But in oral argument, the Justice Department said that yeah, we admit it, it's rarely progressive.
Black lung in 1990.
Well, I don't think that, I mean, that wasn't the question that was specifically addressed in the rulemaking.
That's the question for conclusion. If there is such a category, then the conclusion that a minor had was afflicted by bipolar in the year 2000 would not support finding that he was afflicted by it, say, 10 years later.
Well, I think...
If there's no such category, it's not clear why one would want to re-examine the question.
Well... first of all, I think that if this was a case of, the, of an ordinary collateral estoppel case where you had the same parties in the same circumstances in a relatively compact time frame, you'd be absolutely right. I don't know the answer to that. This man doesn't have the kind that's irreversible. This man has a kind of, this man had a kind of pneumoconiosis which really was kind of an aggravation of an underlying non-occupational condition. He was an asthmatic. Frankly, none of the, exactly what they, what he was compensated for back in, other than that it met the legal definition of pneumoconiosis back in 1988 when his case was decided, is not all that clear. What is clear is that you did have a passage of 12 years, and you do have different parties, and you do have an environment where you are not talking about collateral estoppel, talking about offensive collateral estoppel, and that raises an entirely different set of inquiries that the court is required to engage in. And the problem here is that the administrative law judge did not do that. And it doesn't matter whether, I mean, the whole the question was litigated. It's different parties, different cause of action, and different legal questions. They didn't, we didn't litigate back then whether this preference for the treating doctor was legal or not legal. I can't tell you why, but it wasn't litigated. And so, as a matter of fact, whether the form of pneumoconiosis that this man had is a kind of progressed, regressed, legally or factually, I think is not the relevant inquiry in this case. The relevant inquiry in this case is whether the administrative law judge conducted the Park Lane hosiery inquiry, and he didn't. That's absolutely clear. Also, this is a, you know, this is a, the Park Lane hosiery recognizes that there are other factors in an offensive collateral estoppel environment that need to be considered, and that is like what the motivations of that particular party against whom you're going to assert it are. This was a different company. This company doesn't exist anymore. What is, well, the people who are defending this claim are not these people. These people were perpetually bankrupt. They don't want to litigate. They don't want to go to the Seventh Circuit. It's a different company now, and there are different interests. So it's not an it's not an irrelevant factor. You look at Park Lane hosiery. But that's not a terribly important one. The important factors, however, weren't considered either, which is that is it fair, is it right to apply offensive collateral estoppel in this context? On the second issue is really very short. What the ALJ did here was he decided that he was going to find pneumoconiosis anyway because he wasn't sure about whether he could apply collateral estoppel. And what he did is he never considered any of the evidence that the employer submitted at all. So that's not consistent with precedent. And lastly, the question which is unaffected by the minor's claim. The ultimate question is whether the minor died due to it. And here you have an absolute, complete default to the, what the treating doctor said. Period. That's all it is. And the court has said you can't have that. I think you should understand that one thing that is in the McCandless... Well, I mean, my view doesn't matter. The doctors testify.
I'm not asking what you, Mr. Solomon, think. I'm asking what you are advocating on that.
This is an interesting phenomenon. Because, yeah, I don't think it makes any difference. And he didn't have very severe pneumoconiosis no matter what.
Look, I'm asking a medical question.
Yeah. Record shows it didn't make any difference at all. The record, as I read it, the testimony of Dr. Tudor is that the...
That would be very powerful, but there's no claim in any of Dr. Tudor's
Right. And let me say this. This is another factor that bears on the initial question, too. First of all, it's not our burden. And they didn't cite anything either. But in the rulemaking, when the department attempted to codify this hastening death rule, what came out is that the mortality and morbidity studies made of coal miners showed that in the case of a non-respiratory death, which is what Tudor's talking about here, and what this man had, that there is no literature that establishes any relationship, any impact at all that pneumoconiosis might have on a non-respiratory death. And the only reason the rule was upheld was because you couldn't rule it out 1,000%. And they said, well, maybe somebody can prove it. He didn't prove it here, though.
May it please the Court, Helen Cox for the Director, Office of Workers' Compensation Programs. On the first point on collateral estoppel, Mr. Solomon argues that the ALJ failed to fully discuss offensive collateral estoppel. The four elements of estoppel were discussed by the ALJ. The one factor that the ALJ did not discuss in his decision and which was not really raised by Ziegler Coal Company until their reply brief was the fairness of the application of offensive collateral estoppel. And I think this court can look at the facts here and easily determine that the application of offensive collateral estoppel is not so unfair as to be precluded here, because the cause of action arose from the same coal mine employment by Mr. Villain. The interest in vigorously defending the miner's claim was high because there was the monthly benefits for the miner's lifetime, and he was only 57 at the time of his hearing. His benefits would also be augmented on behalf of his spouse, and therefore the foreseeability of the widow's claim was high once the miner's claim was awarded. And there were no additional procedural opportunities available in the widow's claim that were not also available in the miner's claim. And finally, also the issue of whether or not Mr. Villain had pneumoconiosis is a purely factual issue. So there clearly is no basis for the claim that offensive collateral estoppel would not be an appropriate tool to use here to avoid having to relitigate this issue, which is the identical issue in both claims. The other issue that Mr. Solomon's discussed is the treating physician and the weight of the evidence on the only issue in question here, which is on the widow's claim, is whether or not pneumoconiosis actually hastened the miner's death. And here the ALJ reasonably determined that Dr. Ridge's opinion was a thought-out opinion discussing why he believed that this respiratory condition did in fact hasten the miner's death due to cancer, and for the same reason found that Dr. Tudor's opinion, which failed to acknowledge the existence of the disease in this minor, could not possibly address the relevant issue. And Right, and he made no... Exactly, I definitely misspoke there, and he made no statement that the miner's existing respiratory condition could have or did not have any impact on his death from cancer, whereas Dr. Ridge, the ALJ, found to be credible. He found that the respiratory impairment definitely hampered his ability to fight off the cancer, and therefore he died after only 2 months with cancer, whereas most patients with that typical similar type of cancer he would have expected to live for 3 to 6 months. And as to your point earlier, pneumoconiosis, the question is the existence of pneumoconiosis, and even the employer's doctor, Dr. Tudor, has not presented any evidence showing that pneumoconiosis that the minor had in 1992-91, when the claim was first decided, somehow disappeared by the time of his death in 97. There's no evidence that he was cured from this disease, and it would be the employer's burden of proof to show that the minor's, the finding of pneumoconiosis in the minor's claim was incorrect, and any time, his time to make such a argument would have been during the processing of the minor's claim, even through the modification procedure of the minor's claim. But in this widow's claim, the employer is bound by the prior finding that Mr. Villan had pneumoconiosis at the time that decision was rendered, and therefore the widow should be able to benefit from that and not have to relitigate the issue herself. If there are no further questions, I'll leave the rest of the time for Mr. Black. Thank you.
May it please the court. I'm here only to address the second question in the event that the collateral estoppel is not upheld. Question is, I'm representing Phyllis Villian, is the ALJ's decision supported by substantial evidence? The treating physician saw him 42 times over 17 years, plus three or four hospitalizations. He had great access, unlimited access to this man. In addition, the Office of Workers' Compensation.
Let me ask you,
yes. Yes, there's some specific evidence in the record, if I understand the question right.
Any epidemiological evidence is my question.
Okay. I'm not.
Study-based.
Oh.
Not
anecdotes. No.
The kind of data that the FDA would treat as sufficient to approve a drug. The FDA doesn't treat it as sufficient that some physician says, I gave this drug to my patient and he was cured. It's a miracle. FDA doesn't treat it as sufficient. It wants to study
my knowledge is it's progressive, and there is no such there are no such studies. I have no such knowledge. Specifically, the Office of the Department of Labor had an independent medical evaluation done of this man by Dr. Deppe, who said he had a substantial pulmonary problem, probably caused by his employment. There was Dr. Calhoun also confirmed that this man had pneumoconiosis. So there's three physicians that says he has it. There is one that Dr. Paul that examined him that said he didn't, and then there's Dr. Tudor. Also point out there are six ventilatory tests that are all qualifying, six. And specifically on the question of whether colon cancer pneumoconiosis hastened his death, there was an exchange with Dr. Ridge that specifically addresses that question. And it talks about fluid collection. It says in colon cancer there's fluid collection. And when the fluid collection, the swelling begins, it pushes pressure on the lungs. And if you have strong lungs, the person will last longer. If your lungs are weakened, he will die faster. And he said this man's demise was more rapid, and it was more rapid because his lungs were in a weakened position, and they could not stand the pressure from the swelling of the colon cancer, the fluid collection. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're not trying to relitigate the minor's claim here. What happened with the determination that he had pneumoconiosis the first time was not a factual determination he had pneumoconiosis. It was a default to the treating doctor. And it wasn't a litigated issue then. And we're litigating it now. That's what the problem was there. And all of the discussion of all this stuff, the decision of the administrative law judge and benefit review board speaks for itself. It's just a default to the treating doctor. They didn't go into any investigation. The treating doctor had epidemiology or the treating doctor's opinion was more persuasive or anything. They said he treated him for 20 years, which is just circular, and so we're going to give him more credit. And that was all there was. That's not valid in the circuit. You should, I'd like to tell you, just because it wasn't said, is that the Sixth Circuit does not agree with your decision in McCandless. They say you must give more credit to the treating doctor. And that issue in several cases has been petitioned to the Supreme Court.
Thank you.